For those who enjoy sport, there is no better season. With the World Cup, Wimbledon and the Tour de France happening at the same time, it's a veritable sporting bonanza. And of course, print media is right there, covering all the events and every intricacy, from the first serve to the longest stage to the winning goal. Join us as we celebrate a sport and publishing special today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis. I'm Tom Edwards. On the programme this week, we look at the world of sports magazines. With the summer brimful of mega events all around the world, there's certainly a need for a healthy dose of corresponding print titles covering the main events. We look at a left-field Australian title and the Bible for lovers of cycling. But first, we welcome back to the show our friend David Shaftel from quarterly tennis publication Racquet. And it's always nice that you're here during Wimbledon fortnight. And we've been blessed this week with some unusually and un-English weather. It's like a proper summer, right? What's the sort of Wimbledon mood like? Because obviously you sort of visit all of the slams and all the rest of it. How does Wimbledon measure up? Is it one you kind of look forward to?
I do look forward to Wimbledon. It's the biggest and best tournament on the calendar still, even though sometimes we prefer visiting some of the more low-key ones. So there's that element of it. But it is, you know, it's Wimbledon. It's grass. It's the surface the game was intended to be played on, as far as I'm concerned. A couple years ago, they extended the grass season to 3 weeks from two. But, you know, 30 years ago, three of the slams were on grass. So I'd go back to that if I could.
Well, let's talk just briefly about, obviously, you're kind of working on the new edition of Racquet, but we have the one that's been out on newsstand for a good few weeks now. But the Wimbledon piece in there is good fun, and it's got, I don't know, it's very quintessentially English. The art of queuing. It's always funny. Why did you guys zero in on that as one way to tell the Wimbledon story?
Well, it's an excerpt from a book called Standing in Line by a fellow called Ben Chatfield, who's from, born in Wimbledon Village and has queued up for 30 years and has all these great stories and just loves the queue so much. So I think that's why the story is good, is because there's so much love there between this guy and queuing up. On a personal note, my in-laws lived in Southfields for years, so, and ironically hated Wimbledon and would always leave during the tournament. A chance to put a map of Southfields in there was too good to pass up.
I had a few favourites in this edition. One was a sort of extraordinary. I was like a sort of bit of archive or some kind of a bit of eclecticism, and Racquet's very good at doing that. There's some extraordinary. Can you describe this to me? It's a sort of a document of a career in the game, right? Is that, it doesn't really do it justice.
This is a remarkable document. So it's a profile of a fellow called Martin Mulligan, who had a pretty big career, but he was in the 60s. He was sort of the fourth best Australian player, and the best was Roy Emerson, Rod Laver, guys like that. So Martin Mulligan he's not really remembered for his tennis, although he won the Italian Open, played in Rome three or four times. And the Italians loved him and adopted him, and he became sort of an honorary Italian. He's most notable because he later became the FILA representative, and he sort of put Bjorn Borg in the iconic FILA outfit that everyone knows and loves. So he was beloved in Rome, and this guy, he gave a fan, sort of a super fan, a racquet after a match. Many years later, that fan presented him with this document. I think it's 36 pages long. It's a homemade, color-coded, handwritten spreadsheet documenting every match, every score, every record, every place he played. It's a complete statistical analysis of this guy's career done in his own hand. And we saw it, and I thought, oh, this is a really cool font that this guy has made, and it's an amazing graphic design project. But no, he did it by hand, and I think it took him like 8 years. He went to each individual city, and he's nuts, basically, this guy. And of course, we just printed the whole thing.
It's an extraordinary thing to pore over. The full document must be amazing. And as if to demonstrate the sort of extraordinary breadth and range of the sort of racquet approach, I think it's the very next piece in there. Is it the very next piece? Yeah. Tennis meets tennis, which I also thought was really fun, because this talks about how you guys go to the modern game, you know, current players as well, and I don't know, tap into maybe a different side of the game, their approach. Andrija Petković is the well, I guess the correspondent, really, for this. It, really, really interesting. I wondered how that one came about.
Sure. Well, she was somebody who, before we started the magazine, we were a fan of hers. Always heard how smart and sort of worldly she is. We convinced her to write a piece, I think, in the second or third issue about Jackson Pollock. It was kind of like, oh, you want to contribute, whatever you want to do is fine. Anyway, the piece was great. And then we had this idea to send her on tour with a band called Tennis. And she wanted to compare life on the road as a tennis player to life as a touring musician. And she took Polaroids along the way, which we printed in that story as well. And she wrote this tour diary of being on tour with Tennis. And she was going to find this, all these great similarities between the rock tour and tennis tour. And it's great because at the end of the piece, she says, you know, there were no similarities. It was, but she became great friends with the band and now they hang out and, the piece is great and everything. And she's actually just filed another piece on Philip Roth on the tennis scene in Goodbye Columbus for our next issue. So she's on the masthead now and we can't get enough, basically.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff.
But well, she's very unique in tennis. I don't think there are very few people that could do what she does. She's also the fashion correspondent on our podcast and she's absolutely hilarious. She goes from town to town and sort of files a dispatch on what she sees people wearing in Mallorca and Paris and London. We're lucky to have her.
Take a read, take a listen as well to the multifaceted world of Wreck-It. You mentioned the next issue. Obviously, we're kind of in production mayhem. Can you whet our appetites? That'll be out fairly soon, I guess.
About 3-4 weeks.
Okay, yeah, it'll roll out. We're right in kind of ticking towards D-Day. What have you got in store? Can you share any secrets?
Sure. So that one we launch sort of in conjunction with what's called the U.S. Open Series, which is three or four tournaments that lead up to the U.S. Open in New York. It's kind of going to have a municipal parks department tennis feel to the issue and to the cover. A lot of pieces about urban tennis, the things that relate to the U.S. Open. I mentioned the Philip Roth piece. That'll be in there. We've got a big piece on micro-gambling. These fellows called courtsiders who try to send the results back to computer gambling outfits before the umpires put the result of a point into their little computer so that the sort of algorithm can beat the odds. And then we have another great piece we have is an excerpt from a fellow called Roan Ricardo Phillips, who's just written a book called The Circuit, which will be out in the fall, and he follows the 2017 tennis season. So we have an excerpt on a player called David Goffin, who's another sort of connoisseur's player, just sort of bit on the small side, making the most of his talent, works really hard. So just a sort of gritty public courts sort of feel to this issue.
Like the sound of that. And it's nice to get that mix. You got, you know, there's always this thing with tennis, this sort of the glamour, and then the grafting side is interesting too. Just on the timings of things, it's interesting this year we've got the Football World Cup in train. And actually quite a lot of people have been talking about whatever it'll be, sort of Sunday week, the final of Wimbledon, the men's final, could and probably should be happening literally at the same moment as the World Cup final of football. Is that a forgivable administrative coincidence in your view? Does it matter? Do you think that these two sort of worlds have an eye on each other? I mean, it's a celebrate. If you love all kinds of sport, you need to get maybe a second TV set. But what do you make of that kind of thing?
I do think they go pretty well together. The players all really support their teams. And you always hear in post-match interviews, you know, ex-player talking about how their country did. I think if you have England in the final on Wimbledon final Sunday,
unlikely, frankly, but yeah,
that would be very interesting if you had and if it was a Wimbledon final that people cared about, you know, Federer, Nadal going on during the World Cup final. I think
where do you train your gaze if that's happening?
Well, you have to record one and then, you know, lock your cell phone away, lock yourself away, and just have 9 hours of bliss.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't get much better than that. Now, you mentioned already about Andrea's contributions to your podcast. Obviously, we always like to get a sense from our friends in this crazy game of publishing when they take steps outside and sort of widen what the brand does. And there's so much exciting possibility there. What else? What else have you got kind of simmering away in Wreck-It land for us?
We've had a long-running podcast, which was sort of my co-founder, Caitlin, and a partner sort of irreverent riffing on tennis. And we've just launched this new one. The co-host is a woman called Renee Stubbs, who's an Australian retired tennis player. She won 6 Grand Slam titles in doubles, and that's a bit more mainstream. We've had Chris Evert was on the first one, so it's sort of guests from the tour. Next, we're looking to publish a book of the best writing from the magazine, so just a more mass market compendium of some of the best pieces. those are the two things that are on the immediate horizon, I think.
David, great to see you. Thanks for coming to see us.
Likewise.
The Tour de France, arguably the world's biggest annual sporting jamboree, is also on. In fact, the incredible athletes contesting the Maillot Jaune this year are literally on the road as we speak on stage one. So, it makes sense to have Andy McGrath on the stack this week. He's the editor of cycling publication Rouleur. The mag is very respected in its field and has been indeed since 2006. Famous for its award-winning articles, such as one notable piece that followed displaced Syrian refugee cyclists for a year in Germany as they sought to rebuild their lives and make it as professional bike racers. Rouleur recently published their pre-Tour de France edition, of course the biggest seller of the year. Monocle's own cycling nut, Daniel Bache, spoke to Andy about the ideas and concept behind the magazine.
So Rouleur magazine is a professional cycling publication. It comes out 8 times every year. And it seeks to delve a bit deeper inside the professional sport. So interviews with past and present stars, but we like to ideally spend a few days with them, see them at home rather than at the races. We go to the international races on the circuit everywhere from Britain, France, Iran, Oman. We've been everywhere, really. And we look at the brands as well sometimes and their innovations and what they do to push cycling forward.
I've got two different copies in front of me. This is the same issue, but it's a look ahead to the Tour de France. So the summer issue, the big race, which takes place most of July in France. Can you just describe the two different formats I have here and the two different covers?
Well, this has been going on for a long time. We have a larger members cover, which is a very clean format. You just have the Rouleur logo and a beautiful wraparound image. And a smaller newsstand version, which is a typographic all yellow cover. I'm not sure that's been done before with the professional cycling magazine. And it's kind of, I suppose, firstly, it's an enticement to become a member because you don't just get that larger format. You also get discounts in our online emporium and a discount to our show in November, the Rouleur Classic. It's just another of those things that incentivizes joining Rouleur, really.
And just before we came on, you were mentioning that you don't talk about your subscribers as subscribers. They're called members, a part of what you do and maybe a bigger community. Is that a conscious part of the brand?
I think it is. I mean, cycling is a very friendly sport. Cycling clubs, it's all built around this thing where you meet up on the weekend and then you go riding. And it's such a great pursuit because you can talk so easily when you're on the bike. It isn't like football or tennis where you're breathless. So it kind of ties into that friendliness.
Cycling, the aesthetic of it, it's just so rich, I guess, for a magazine. There's so much to showcase. And I'm just really struck by how beautiful the magazine is in the spreads, the adverts. This is a really nice printing. What's the design idea behind the magazine?
That's partly down to our art director, Rob Johnston, who's been with the magazine for a long time now. Again, we just want to offer something that's very different. We've always, kind of from the outset in 2006, wanted to show there was so much more than what was already out there. We don't do any reviews, for example. It's kind of, I suppose, it's mixing nostalgia and the present and not focusing on the obvious set pieces of the sport. We don't like to show the finish line, the victory celebrations of the guy winning the race, which is what you'd see in the newspapers, just like you might see in football tabloids, the goal being scored, that's the shot for them. That's not the shot for us. We're always looking for maybe a few frames afterwards, 2 seconds later, capturing something special like that. And we're always trying to be original. I always try and surprise and ideally delight the reader.
It's really interesting you say you focus on the pro side of the sport. A lot of other brands, I guess, have tried to move away from that and make cycling more approachable. And the pro sport, of course, has had its issues in past with different scandals, but has really regrown itself. And we see a renewed interest in the big tours, especially, and the Tour de France coming up, which this issue looks at. I'm so struck again by just the visuals in this magazine and sort of the access you seem to have with the riders, because a lot of other publications don't really have that one-on-one with the athletes. This, you're really sort of getting behind the scenes with some of the reporting here.
That's right, yeah. it's really important to give a sense of intimacy and authenticity. We've been to several of the flashpoints of this year's Tour de France route. Just to explain a little bit further, there's 21 daily stages to the Tour de France. The route changes every single year. And we have 21 stories in this issue. And they're all linked to that stage. It may be the date, it may be the place, it may be the person. But for example, yeah, we've interviewed Warren Barguil, who was the King of the Mountains last year, a big French favourite. And he's also a Breton. So we put that on stage 4 because the stage starts in his home city. But I think also that Rula, in more than the last 10 years we've been around, we've kind of got a name with the pro cyclists. They know we're going to do a good job and make them look fantastic photographically, which helps as well when it comes to access, to answer your question.
These days with cycling, you've mentioned the word nostalgia as well, but if you walk into certain cafes, and there's a showcase of the old days of the sport, I guess, this sort of glory days of the cyclist. And there's some of that in this magazine, the black and white photos and just how amazing these riders look. They really show off the personality of the riders and their effort. Is that difficult to do these days with the type of riders on the tour? And are the stories as good these days?
It's kind of something we were talking about the other day, actually. Firstly, it is harder to show the effort and the emotion because most of them are wearing wraparound sunglasses, which they don't take off, mainly due to sponsor deals. Well, they're wearing helmets, there's not casquettes, they're not even bareheaded, it's that kind of thing. So that's also a difficulty. The stories, there's still so many great untold stories out there. Sometimes you have to either go on a hunch or dig very deep. Perhaps it's slightly harder, and there's more media, social media, there's so much more noise, but I suppose it makes it even more valuable when you do find that golden nugget.
You've talked about the riders having trust in the reporting that you're going to do. They know what to expect, and I'm sure they like to work with you as well. There's such strong style in this magazine. That's a really big part of the sport now, I guess, as I've mentioned, the word aesthetic. You know, it's important what the riders are wearing and what they want to show off and the way their bike looks. The magazine really seems to do a great job of showcasing that style of the sport as well.
Yeah, it's quite funny how it's changed fairly quickly. Maybe 15, 20 years ago, kind of all the cycling kit out there was kind of boil-in-the-bag stuff in day-glow colours. It wasn't particularly attractive. But I think we've really seen this change, in the last 10 years. And people are much more mindful of what they're wearing, how they look. And that's fine. I think we've already seen that across other sports like football and tennis, that style is so important. And even with independent publications like Mundial and Racquet, which I'll be reading this summer, you know, with the World Cup and Wimbledon respectively on.
What's it like to work for the magazine? You send people to all these great places, uncover stories from races in Iran and strange places all over the world that we don't really link to cycling. But what type of person do you have to be to sort of write for this magazine?
Well, it's quite a small team, quite small permanent staff. We have a few of us who kind of deal hands-on with the magazine. But we have, I'd say, a kind of trusted network of freelancers around the world. And it's a combination of sometimes we might come up with the idea and we'll think who will be the best person to put this into practice. And other times a freelancer will have a passionate project they want to pursue, like the German photographer who pitched us a tour of Iran and went out and did it. And it was so much more than just a bike race. What we showed was we juxtaposed the racing images with the people there, because 99% of our readership will not have seen Iran. And even I didn't realise in the editing process, Iran's double the size of France. It's one of the biggest countries in Asia. There's so much history to it and so much conflict. So it's always trying to kind of educate and inform the reader a bit more about what goes into the bike race and the things beyond the barriers, as it were.
Thanks to Andy and to Daniel too for that piece on Rouleur. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. This is The Stack. Now, before we head to our last item, the programme's producer, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, joins me to talk a little bit about print and the Football World Cup. Good to chat with you. We've been talking about cycling, we've been talking about tennis, the World Cup. It's reaching the real business end of the tournament now. Let's reflect a little on how that's covered. You still reach for your daily newspapers for the up-to-the-minute World Cup fix. What's the sort of print mood of the World Cup in your view?
Well, I got to tell you, Tom, it's stressful in the sense because there's so much to read. I think, especially here in the UK, all the dailies, they have at least 20 pages minimum every single day about the World Cup. And I think it's fantastic. And all the graphics, you know, it's not only about the match. And that's what I find fascinating. For example, even from my own country, Folha, they did a graph with the height, the average height of all the players. And they compared with cars. So it's things that actually you don't need to know, but actually you...
You do need to know
in some way. So I just find it fascinating. Gotta be honest, I am unlike you, I'm not a reader of the sports pages that frequently, but during the World Cup it's fantastic and there's a lot to read. And I'm very happy with the Stack because I have so many nice sports publications as well. I find it fascinating.
Well, let's ease on to another, which you have in your hands there. And this is something that we've looked at a couple of times as the volumes have come into Midori House. And that's Good Sport. Tell us a bit about this one.
Good Sport is a fantastic title. It's biannual, coming from Australia. Again, it's not exactly about the sport itself, but the things surrounding it. For example, they have an amazing profile here of Lance Wyman. He was the designer of the Mexico Olympics, of the logo and everything. So it's fantastic. I think it's still today one of the best logos ever when it comes to the Olympics. And, you know, the magazine is a delight to read. You know, they talk about, you know, kind of the sport, the hidden habitats, you know, where people practice sports. So, for example, we have a cricket ground in Melbourne, among other things. So it's a really, really interesting title. And Ben Clement, it was founded by Ben Clement as well.
Well, let's hear a bit more from him. Fair, you caught up with Ben Clement, as I understand it. And I think one of the things he touched upon was, well, to give you a steer, essentially, on the kind of stories that feature in the magazine.
Good Sport is a magazine that's view is kind of left of field. So we explore life through and outside of sport. So we try and represent a new wave of sport culture and ideas. And it's like a platform that pushes photography and stories further for a kind of growing and creative, engaged kind of audience. So everything we kind of do has some sort of entry point or connection to sport. Doesn't have to be literally someone's slam dunking a basketball. We like to look at things from architecture to food and design and social justice and travel and things like that.
And it's interesting that the idea worked very well, Ben, because, for example, I was checking on your website, issue 2 is out of stock already, for example.
Yeah, totally. Issue 1 and 2 sold out pretty quickly, within probably about 3 to 4 months. And issue 3 currently selling really well. Our online sales have kind of exhausted and sold out. But a lot of our stock is through like Europe and the UK and North America still selling and kind of reordering from our distributors, which is really awesome.
And you're based in Australia, right? Does the magazine have any sort of kind of an Australian DNA, for example? Does it have a big market there as well?
We've been quite selective and slow with our Australian distribution and kind of market, but we do have a kind of a strong DNA because mostly in the content kind of sphere, because I find everyone believes global is more Europe and the UK and North America, and a lot of the time Australasia isn't considered as global, but we kind of have access to some really amazing stories that don't get covered by some other publications or platforms. So it's quite awesome. We would rather someone go to a store that we or a like a bookstore or a retail outlet or whatever it may be, would rather direct them somewhere that we believe is going to really sell it rather than just saturate the market quickly.
And one thing I noticed, Ben, that you guys do value print. So, for example, your website's very beautiful, but, you know, it's mainly kind of about images. It's not just, for example, you're not going to read Good Sport magazine on there, you know. So I think it was great how selective you were. Was that your strategy, you know, so kind of maybe focusing more on the print product?
Definitely. Print is always like 100% the main focus. We do believe there's specific types of content that can live online. And it's a way to kind of continuously talk to our audience and readership. And just kind of sometimes if someone doesn't have access to the magazine, they can look at the website and understand quite quickly what we're about. But that's almost the way we designed it as well, to kind of feel like a magazine. It's not in your face with lots of information. It's quite stripped back and you don't know what you're reading straight away and like you're turning pages type of thing. But yeah, print is definitely the main focus, and we're kind of everything we do always has to return to print or refer to the magazine.
And I have to mention to readers as well, I mean, the stories are fascinating. For example, in issue 3, you have an amazing profile of Lance Wyman, who is he was responsible for the visual identity of the 68 Olympics. You know, tell us more about this article and perhaps other ones that you think our listeners might be interested.
Yeah, that story came out really amazing. We worked with a graphic designer and writer, Andy, who's based in Mexico, and he's kind of part of the website design boom, and does, you know, I met him out on a photo shoot in Melbourne, and we kind of got talking, and he kind of pitched the idea, and he was because he was already based in Mexico, he kind of was on the ground, and he works quite closely to architecture and things like that, so he kind of got Lance's contact, and he flew to New York and sat down and had this amazing interview with him, and it was just one of those ones that when you read it, you're like, wow, we got like this incredible kind of insight. And luckily a photographer from London was in New York at a similar time and went to his studio to photograph him, and he gave us access to his whole archive of just like whether they're photographs he had taken or that had just referenced from that time that he had spent working on that identity. And just the really interesting kind of insight was pretty mind-blowing, really. Our cover story was really interesting as well with Denzel Curry, who's a US rapper. And I met him through some friends of ours who run the magazine Brick Magazine, which is based in London. And I had actually photographed him for that magazine. And I got speaking to him. His manager actually owns a really interesting kind of independent kind of bookstore in Miami. And he stocked the magazine. And I realized Denzel was really into boxing and Muay Thai and kind of training. And I was like, this is a really interesting crossover. So it kind of the way that we were all connected to the story kind of came together really well. And the interview came out exceptionally well as well. And one of my favorite photographers got to photograph him in LA. And it was, yeah, really, really awesome.
That was the insights of Ben Clement from Good Sport magazine talking to Fernando. And Faye, we're almost out of time. We need to go and watch the World Cup now, right?
Well, good luck England today, huh?
Yeah, it's only a few hours away. I'm not nervous at all. What are you saying? Thanks to Faye for producing this week's programme. Thanks to our editors too, Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. Fernando, you still want people to get in touch. Remind them how they can reach you.
My favourite part of the show, just email me on fp@monaco.com.
Right, your job is not quite discharged just yet, Fernando. Even though it'll only be a fleeting glimpse, if such a thing exists in audio form, we should mark the World Cup, because it's been such a good one, with what, for my money, is potentially the best World Cup track there's ever been. What are we going to play out with?
And I agree with you, Tom. It is, of course, New Order and the fantastic World in Motion. Express yourself.